When we challenge, we're better off. And we either win or we learn.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with Greg Lyon, who is the Chief Marketing Officer of the Beverage Portfolio at PepsiCo. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
For sure. So looking forward to the conversation. I want to start with a little bit of your own personal background. Can you tell me about what's led you to the position you're in today here at PepsiCo?
Sure. Right after college, I went into marketing consulting for a few years, and that's where I developed my love of brand management. The first brand I fell in love with was Miller High Life Beer, the champagne of beers. And I knew I wanted to do it for a living. It was the first time I woke up and was truly excited for coming to work and learning and helping build brands. And so I went back to business school at Kellogg, and then I've been at PepsiCo ever since, coming up on 25 years now, Dave. And I've worked in a few different countries. I've worked on big brands and small brands. I've worked in snacks and in beverages. And I got back to North America in about 2000 and ran our beverage business in Canada, and then came down to the U.S. in about 2018 and have been working in our North America beverage business ever since.
You took over the role as the CMO for Beverage Portfolio, I think, in around 2017. How have you seen this portfolio evolve, as the word Pepsi now means a lot when you think about this portfolio overall?
Yeah, when I first became CMO, one of the things that we noticed was that our portfolio was a little bit overweight in carbonated soft drinks and sports drinks. And we have some terrific brands there, Gatorade, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, et cetera. And those are terrific categories, and they still are today. But there were some beverage categories that were growing faster and were probably more set up for the future. And since I've become CMO, we've transformed the portfolio to play in more categories than we were playing in. And so we have established a business in the energy category, sparkling water, enhanced water, protein drinks, beyond the bottle, we call, which is like powders and tablets and containers. And so I feel we're a much more robust portfolio now that's set up for the future. And then not just from a portfolio standpoint are we different, but one of the things that's super about marketing this as well is that it continues to evolve. And so the marketing that you and I did when we started our career is completely different than the marketing we do now. And spending a lot of time transforming the capabilities in our department as well. And so we've done things like on the creative side, we've in-housed a creative team. We're still going to always use terrific external partners, but we now have an in-house creative team. Hired a bunch of data scientists, and now we measure all of our marketing in a proprietary way. And one of the things I'm most proud of is how we've built a database now. We have 130 million first-party data records that we can use to help target our marketing better than we have before. It's been a transformation journey, both on the portfolio side, but also on the way we do marketing.
When you look at managing a house of brands like that, one of the challenges for a lot of large companies is you usually have one or two dominant brands in the portfolio. And they, no matter if you want to invest in other things, they still grab that lion's share. How were you able to manage that kind of balancing when you have these major brands like Gatorade and Pepsi, and then investing in that future and that next generation that you had on your plate?
You need different models of how you launch and support brands. And so there's the traditional model, which is big A&M, national, A&M means advertising marketing, national media, drive mass awareness quickly. And that certainly works for some brands. But if you're going to play in every category, it's difficult to do that, to your point, with every single brand. And so there are some brands that we support with nothing but social or experiential. And we've got a terrific go-to-market DSD system that helps get our brands visible in store as well. And that's half the battle when you're building the brand, is just to make sure you have some availability, whether that's at retail or we have a channel that we're doing really well in right now called food service, which is a terrific place to build a brand, whether that's restaurants or stadiums or bars, et cetera. And so we've become a little bit more nimble in how we launch brands, because you're right, there's no way that you could do the big boom launch model in every category.
Speaking of some of those brands, two of the really interesting success stories under your time in the seat have been Bubbly and Starry. And both of those are categories at a high level that PepsiCo has maybe tried to play in the past. And this time has been incredibly more successful maybe than past efforts. How did you approach these differently to enter these categories? And what's resulted in this pretty remarkable growth from both of those brands?
Thanks. Yeah, when we're going to enter a new category, we have a couple of simple principles. So one is, we want to drive growth in that category. We want to grow the category as opposed to just launching something that's going to take share from someone in that category. And in order to do that, you need a brand, a proposition that's going to have some sort of advantage consumer experience in some way. And so let's take Bubbly, for example. To your point, we had tried to launch a brand in sparkling water a few times and unsuccessful. The latest attempt before we launched Bubbly was called Aquafina Sparkling. I think Coke tried Dasani Sparkling. Those brands did not have the stretch to go into those categories. Interesting. I was just talking with a friend the other day about this. What I haven't seen in my career, and I've been working in foods and beverages for a long time, I haven't seen a brand that doesn't have bubbles in it get into a category that does have bubbles in it, or vice versa. And we tried a couple times, and it just can, it's hard for consumers to get their heads around that. And so for Bubbly, what we wanted to do is bring, first of all, an advantage product. So Blind Bubbly tastes better than any sparkling water. We've got terrific flavors, and our carbonation level is just right. And then from a brand standpoint, it was a very serious and almost worthy category. You had the fun of the soda brands, and then you had the seriousness or the worthiness of the sparkling waters, because it was a more serious choice for consumers. And what we were able to do with Bubbly is bring some lightheartedness and playfulness into that category. And we did that with the little tabs on the cans that have messages and the smiles on the cans. And it's been a real success. We've supported it consistently. It's the highest equity and awareness brand right now in sparkling water. And we've just expanded that into what's called sweetened sparkling water. And same thing, there's not a fun and playful brand in that space right now. And we've come in with an advantage product. And so that model works pretty well for us on Bubbly. And then on Starry, yeah, we used to have a brand called Sierra Mist. And one of the errors we made on Sierra Mist was we didn't support it consistently. We were on again, off again, to the point you were making earlier. And we were not consistent with what the brand stood for. We launched it one way, and then we tried to make it a little bit more healthy and natural another way. And again, when people are drinking soda, what they want is crisp and refreshing, especially lemon lime is crisp and refreshing. And we've been able to nail that with Starry. We've got an advantage product, especially on our zero sugar product. Starry zero sugar, the flavor on that is phenomenal and advantaged in the category. And you can see in our first year that the percentage of our Starry business that is zero sugar is significantly higher than that of Upper Sprite. We also wanted to bring a little bit of good vibes into the category. Sprite is cool and a terrific brand, but we thought we could zig a little bit and bring some optimism, lightness, and good vibes into the category with Starry, and I think we're starting to do that in a pretty effective way.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
You mentioned earlier this change that we've had in the world of marketing and the way we grew up doing marketing. There's no one probably more closely tied to big events like the Super Bowl and others than PepsiCo as a whole. That world has started to change as you think about consumer insights and analytics and everything that leads to the choices. Mm-hmm. How have you encouraged your team to bring that use of data and analytics into being responsive and agile with the choices you're making as a marketer?
Yeah, like I said before, we've been on a big capability journey. And it is, for people who didn't grow up with all of this data, you and I, it's difficult to change behaviors always in the marketing department. And so you just have to start embedding new ways of doing things into how you work every day, into your briefs, into your reviews, and into your everyday activities as a marketer. Let me give an example of how we brought data into some things specifically. So when we used to innovate, we would look at big, broad consumer trends. We'd look at what brands are doing well and what categories are doing well. And we'd look at big reports on ingredients and try to pull that all together. And that worked pretty well. But we've created what we call an attribute engine. And what that does is it's a proprietary, pretty sophisticated model that looks at what people are talking about on social and tracks ingredients that are trending and tracks brands that are trending and tracks flavors that are trending. And if people are talking about it more than they used to, then we look at all of the menus in restaurants all over the world. Then we look at what is working well internationally from a beverage standpoint. Then we look at what is doing well online and reviews online and what is scoring the best. And then we have some 400 really cool trend young people that we talk to and get their points of view. And we pull that all together in a pretty sophisticated model. And that spits out what we think is going to be driving future beverage growth. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty smart. And it's really helped us focus and create some pretty cool ideas that we're working on right now.
So related to that, you mentioned earlier that you've brought some of your creative work in-house with that, and you brought some of your analytics to study this data. When we think about the brands in a portfolio, we're going through probably, I'd call it the last decade to 15 years, has been one of the largest times of growth of new brands that's ever existed before. As people launch new things, look at consumer trends, how do you get your team to stay agile with the product development versus the agility of, let's say, a new startup that is launching in functional cola or something of that nature?
Yeah, we're trying to. Pepsi has a legacy of having a challenger mindset. And just read a really good article, I think from Forbes, that was talking about big companies, big established companies that embrace the challenger mindset are actually pretty significantly advantaged over startups that have that challenger mindset, because we have all of these resources. And if we can take some big swings, we have the resources to miss, whereas the startups do not. And are consistent in trying to drive that challenger mindset in everything we do. And what that does, to your point, is it helps challenge the status quo and keeps us a little bit more agile than some other big established companies. And it's wonderful. That's one of the things I love about PepsiCo, is that it's almost part of our DNA to have that as part of our culture.
So when you think about that culture and maintaining that, to your point, somebody can make $1 million swing and it's not going to sink PepsiCo as a company. How do you get your team comfortable with that risk and that willingness that failure is a good thing and it's part of this environment and being a challenger to take those bets, take those swings?
That's such a good question, Dave, and so important as part of a company with a culture of a challenger mindset. If you had that culture and then you penalized people for swinging and missing, you'd unravel really quickly. And when we challenge, we're better off. And we either win or we learn. And so it's all about codifying the learnings when you swing and miss. And we celebrate those as much as we celebrate it when we swing and hit a home run. That is an absolute prerequisite of having a culture like this, without question.
Yeah. And how do you keep that mindset maintained as you now have a portfolio of leaders underneath you and new people come in? How do you make sure they keep practicing that and keep that growth and that culture of challenger in mind?
Yeah, just like when you're embedding new behaviors, you want to embed the culture. It hasn't been too hard, quite frankly, because it's part of Pepsi's DNA is to have that challenger mindset. So people who join the company, they're already challengers at heart, I would say. But to the point you were making earlier about swinging and missing, we have reviews on the big swings that we make every year, and then we codify the learnings from that, and then we celebrate them every year. You know that we're going to take two or three big swings every year, so that automatically is, wow, these guys are challenging. You know that you're going to review them, and you're going to learn from them, and then you know that you're not going to be punished. You're going to celebrate the learnings and then incorporate those as you go. If you just speak and say stuff, but it's not embedded in how you do stuff, it doesn't work. You need to walk the walk, and actions speak way louder than words.
You've been leading this business since 2017, and that includes leading the business through what was pretty difficult in the world of the COVID pandemic and everything else there. How have you really been able to think about taking that culture and the challenger mindset to maintain a one of positivity and lead through times that were maybe uncertain, didn't know where things were going, and to keep the business solid, to keep your people solid, and keep the company on solid footing?
Thanks for that question. I think that's so important. So I strongly believe in something called authentic and compassionate leadership. And if I'm honest, it did take COVID for me to really figure out how important this was and lead in that way. And we've all been through such difficult times, and whether it's COVID or something that's happened in your personal life, when you really think about it, developing authentic relationships with your friends, the people you work with, your family, there's nothing more important in life. And when you do that, it just makes life so much more meaningful and so much more fun. And I figured at work, when you really start to get to know people and you really care about them, what happens is it breaks down some barriers, that you develop a level of trust, and it just speeds things up. And it makes people feel safe to be themselves at work. And I've noticed when marketers feel safe bringing their whole selves to work, and they work with people that they care about and who know that their bosses and their peers care about them, they start thinking bigger and they start enjoying themselves more. And a marketer who's trying to be someone they're not, or worried about failure, or doesn't feel that they fit in, they're not going to be as great a marketer as someone who is feeling confident, thinking big, and feels part of something bigger and feels that they belong. And so I've been spending a lot of time and energy on the culture of the department and setting up the leaders in this department of people who really care about each other and the folks on their teams. And I think that's one of the secret sauces we have here that develops some of the best marketing.
So I want to go back to one of the things you mentioned earlier was the initiative of the Beyond the Bottle that is part of your business. The world is filled with let's call it industries and brands and companies that too narrowly defined what problem they were solving. I'm in this industry, not this broader one. Mm-hmm. How have you been able to take a business where PepsiCo has been in the beverage, the liquid beverage business for a long time, to think beyond the bottle and think about the problem you're solving is broader than maybe a liquid just in a bottle?
Great question. Yeah, PepsiCo is obviously beyond beverages too. We're foods and beverages, but that one's a very simple one, which is there's a very big trend towards, do you have kids, Dave?
I do. I have 11-year-old twins at home.
Oh, amazing. Congrats. Yeah, so I've got 4 kids now, and 3 of them are in college, and they all walk around with water bottles, some sort of container. And
Stanley's, as we know too much.
Yeah, ours all walk around with Gatorade bottles, but branded bottles with their college logos on them. And then the young folks that I hire out of school here, they're all coming to the office with bottles in their hands. And what are they going to put in those? It doesn't make sense to open a bottle of Pepsi and pour that in there. Sometimes we have fountain units all over here, but they're adding powders to enhance their beverages, enhance their water. And so it's a natural space that has been growing, so it's sustainable. It delivers good value, and it's on trend with functional beverages because that category has moved away from just powders that taste good to powders that provide some sort of function. And so what a terrific opportunity for us and Propel and Gatorade to extend into that play as well. And it wasn't that hard, quite frankly, because if we didn't, we'd be losing some volume to that area. And so it was a natural adjacency. What was difficult for us was getting our heads around, do we manufacture it ourselves or do we co-pack it and the supply chain and how that works? But we figured that out pretty quickly.
I think that's a perfect kind of place to bring a conclusion, wrap up to everything. So really appreciate you sharing the journey and the kind of amazing way that you've helped evolve the PepsiCo beverage portfolio over the last few years.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.